Hey there, this is Seth Juarez with Channel 9 here with Tomasz Petrychek. Is that the right way to say it?
That's pretty close.
So you came all the way to the UK. We're here on the Redmond campus. What are you doing here?
Well, I'm visiting Microsoft. I'm speaking at the Data Science and Machine Learning conference here.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also doing some F-sharp trainings for Microsoft.
Oh, wonderful. So well, since you're here, maybe you can train all of us on F-sharp. The first question that I have, and this is one that I always like to ask when someone talks about technology, why should someone consider using F-sharp?
Yeah, well, so I think in the F-sharp community, we've been trying to answer this very often and for a long time. And we only now realize that when you talk about it, we should actually give more like business reasons.
Right.
So really if you're, and this is really useful for the audience as well, because if you're trying to convince your managers that you should be using F-sharp, this is the way to do it.
Right.
So I think the four main reasons are time to market. If you're using F-sharp, you're more likely to actually finish your software on time. The other one is correctness. So generally there's lots of case studies that show that with F-sharp you have fewer bugs in your software. Mm-hmm. The next one is you can sort of handle more complex problems. So you can implement more efficient algorithms, do something more clever than you would be doing otherwise. And the final one, which is really important these days, is that you can write efficient code that scales well to the cloud.
Okay, so let's start with the time to market. That's a pretty bold statement. How does F-sharp pay it off? What is it about F-sharp that lets you get to market faster?
Yeah, well, I think the first reason is that in F-sharp, it's really easy to prototype.
Uh-huh.
So you can just open your Visual Studio, and I guess we'll see that later on.
Yeah, I hope so.
Start with an F-sharp script file and try some ideas. And you can do this very interactively. So my usual process when working with F-sharp is that I just open F-sharp interactive, write some code in a script file, and when I feel like it's doing the right thing, I only then actually turn it into a project.
Got it.
So it gives you much faster feedback loop.
I see. And so when you're writing these things and you're sort of playing, because there's like there's a playing around phase when you're trying to get things to work, you're saying that with F-sharp, there's a faster feedback loop. And then once that script works, that's really the actual code that you're going to use.
Yeah, well, once the script works, you can take it into a project, refactor it, extract the dirty hex you wrote,
right,
and turn them into unit tests.
Right.
But I think that's one of the reasons. I guess the other is that F-sharp is fairly expressive. So all the functional constructs make it easier to sort of define the libraries and define your basic building blocks that are closer to how you actually think about problems.
Got it. So let's talk about functional first is F-sharp's sort of mantra.
That's right.
How does being functional first help with time to market?
Well, I think it's sort of shaping your whole way of coding. Mm-hmm. So I guess measuring that directly is kind of tricky, but it does things, it has basically the defaults, right?
Right.
So by default, when you're defining a type, it will be immutable.
Uh-huh.
And that not only helps you with concurrency and parallelism, which is sort of a nice selling point, but in reality, it just makes it easier to understand what your code does.
Right. So let's go to the second thing. You mentioned first was time to market, then it was correctness.
Yeah.
Tell us how F-sharp helps your program be correct by default.
So in F-sharp, there's this sort of idea that when you're defining types, mm-hmm. you should only define, well, your types should be defined so that any value that you have is a valid state.
Okay.
So I guess the most obvious case of this is the null value.
Right.
Because if you have an object that can be null, in most situations that's not a valid state.
Right. It's like the netherworld of time. Anything can be nothing, but everything shouldn't be nothing. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Or another one would be if you were defining, say, time for a time slot in a calendar for the recording that we're doing, you could say it's just two date time values. But then what if someone sets the second one to be before the first one?
Oh,
like
I
that's
see.
An invalid state.
Right, I see. And so how does F-sharp help with that?
So in F-sharp, you have sort of more expressive way of defining types. We have records, which is just a collection of properties, just like plain old object, mm-hmm. without methods. And then we have something called discriminated unions, mm-hmm. which is basically defining a number of separate cases. Mm-hmm. And so you use these to express your, to basically define your domain model. And then when you have a value from the domain model, you know it means something.
I see. So you, a priori, when you're starting to think about your program, you have to model it correctly and have all of the defined states a priori.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that way, when you're actually working on the program, you're never going to be in an unexpected state.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens when you have to have a new state?
Well, usually when you're sort of modeling the domain, like there's another nice thing about the way you do it in F#, because you usually end up with just a couple of lines of code. So it's fairly short. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that you can show this to your sort of business user, but very often you can actually show it to someone who's a bit technical, mm-hmm. and they will get it.
Okay.
So sort of when you're designing the domain model, you can actually talk to your customer or to your colleagues about the model, and you can say, does this actually capture all the valid states we have, or are we missing something?
Got it. That's awesome. So it's almost as if you are telling the user or the person that wants a program, this is what our world looks like. Is this right?
Yeah.
And they'll
say,
oh, no, it looks like you're missing. And they'll be able to look at the code and be able to reason about it.
Yeah. And they don't really need to look at the implementation of the operations.
Right.
Although sometimes that might be the case as well. But you can really just sort of focus on the domain model. It's kind of like if you were drawing UML diagrams.
Right.
This is kind of the same thing, but it's in the code.
That's awesome.
And it doesn't get out of sync.
That's really nice. And what you can do is you could even probably put it in its own file and have people look at it that are
not necessarily
programmers too.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So the third one you mentioned is that F# helps manage complexity. Tell us how it does that.
Well, I guess there's, again, a couple of reasons. But one thing I find really useful in F# is type inference. Mm-hmm. So basically, I can write fairly complicated block of code. Like I was doing a sample for the talk I'm doing tomorrow. Uh-huh. And I adapted the k-means clustering uh-huh. algorithm.
Which is a fun one, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. We can post the link to the source code.
Sure.
But there, you sort of write your algorithm, and you don't really have to worry too much about the types, because when you're writing the algorithm, when you're implementing it, the type inference will figure out most of the stuff.
So tell us, for those that aren't familiar with what type inference does, what is it?
Yeah, so, well, I guess many people will know it in C# with the var keyword, uh-huh. where the idea is, when you write some expression, the compiler can figure out what's the type of the expression, and you don't have to write it explicitly. It just sort of fills in all the places where the type is needed.
Does F# take that to another level, though?
Yeah, that's exactly what F# does. Like with C#, you have it for local variables, and with F#, it basically works over the whole file. So you just say let k-means distance function, aggregation function equals, then write your code, and it figures out that to do the k-means clustering, you need a distance function which takes two items uh-huh. and produces a float, mm-hmm. and it makes the code automatically generic. So you just write it, and then it figures out, well, actually, I don't need to know what's the thing I'm clustering. Uh-huh. It makes it into a generic parameter, because all I need to know about it is that I can measure distance between two values.
And I think I always think of it like almost as the anonymous type, but better tooling on top of it. Because, for example, with the anonymous type, once it comes out of a function scope, you can no longer get IntelliSense on it.
Yeah.
In F# you can, though, right?
Well, in F# you actually have to define the types. Mm-hmm. So F# doesn't have anything like anonymous types.
Yes.
It has tuples, which mm-hmm. is what you would use in the similar mm-hmm. context. But you define your types in your domain model, and that's your correct world.
Right.
And then you work with them. And when you work with them, you don't have to write the types.
Right.
It sees what's available and uses that.
I remember the first time I wrote something in F#, there was this sort of a little not an exclamation mark, a sort of, what's that, a single tick?
Yeah, single tick.
And that's to me what was interesting, because that's the same type of an anonymous type when you're inside of C sharp. And so to me, the interesting thing is that you can use types really richly in F sharp, whereas in C sharp, you certainly can, but only locally if you're working with stuff that are declared inside.
I guess there's quite a few other things where F sharp takes the idea of types a bit further.
Right.
Like there's units of measure, where you basically, whenever you have a number in your program, you put an annotation on it that says this is in meters. And then you do some calculation, and if you divide meters by seconds, you have a value of type meters per second.
That's awesome.
So, but it sounds very useful for physics and modeling, but you can use it in finance as well. Just mark things as money, and then you won't end up subtracting money from gold or something.
Which brings us to the next thing. F sharp, you said, was efficient and highly concurrent. How does F sharp pay that off?
Yeah. Well, I think that the type inference really means that the performance is roughly the same as in C sharp. There's sort of little tricks you can do in F sharp, like you can mark things as inline, and that sometimes makes things faster. But really, sort of you can write code that's equally efficient to C sharp, which is already pretty good.
Got it.
And then on the concurrency and parallelism side, we just take whatever's available.
Right.
So in F sharp, you can use the task parallel library if you're doing sort of some simulations on a single machine. On the cloud side, there's actually a really amazing project called Embrace, which lets you take F sharp code, wrap it in a cloud block, just like in C sharp, and that's coming from F sharp. You have the async block to say, well, make this code asynchronous, while F sharp takes it further and adds the cloud block, and then you can run the code, and it will distribute it on your entire Azure cluster.
That's pretty cool. I saw a demo of that. I think Lena showed it to me at .NET Fringe, and I was blown away. You guys also showed it to me. I think it was we had a .NET Conf earlier.
Right.
It's pretty amazing that now, instead of doing things asynchronously, you can do things asynchronously but on different machines using Embrace.
Yep.
So there's a notion of efficiency at runtime and also efficiency when you're writing code. How does F sharp help with efficiency when you're writing code?
Well, I guess it really sort of starts from the quick feedback loop, where if you just want to try something out or do some thinking before you get to coding, you can do it really easily in the interactive and the REPL style programming mode. And then I guess the types will guide you.
Yeah.
So you define your domain model and then you work with it.
It feels like once you define your types, as you're writing the functions, if something's missing, your domain will tell you right away, you did not think about this correctly if you're trying to make this function this way.
Yeah, and I guess there's very often the sort of the situation you'll end up with is that you have some way of representing the world and that it's really easy to do operations on it. And maybe you have some sort of larger transformation that gives you different views of the world.
Right.
Like, one example that's, I guess, interesting is a library I worked on called F-sharp formatting, and it lets you, among other things, format markdown documents. There you basically have this like text representation of a document. You can parse it and you get something that's basically a tree-like structure.
Cool.
Or as the functional people would say, abstract syntax tree.
Right, of course.
Where you have document is a sequence of blocks. Block can be a paragraph, heading, or code block. A paragraph is a sequence of elements.
Right.
And so you get this like text representation. You transform it to another representation, which is this tree. And then you can do lots of things on the tree. Like you can extract all the links, generate references, number the headings, extract TOC.
Right.
And then you can transform it to another representation, which would be like HTML or PDF.
And so it was just F-sharp was really good about doing that.
Yeah. Whenever you have some sort of transformations, that's really a good fit for it.
Fantastic. Well, I think this is a pretty good overview of why we should be thinking about looking at F-Sharp. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Yeah.
We are going to make a couple more, and so hopefully you'll stay tuned. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
See you.